kaya nendama kwa mangharaba salibati Henga bewezi janina
Ugarela
Uboka ulupele ndot
Eshe
Hosa Siye Township Jam.
They have what they call South African barbecue over there. It's called, is it braai? Yeah, it's called braai. And it's basically take a whole bunch of meat, just barbecue up, and it's glorious and it's amazing.
Beyond that, just being able to see the beauty of the nature and the ocean and the coast that we got to experience. The elephants, the animals, and everything that you just don't get to see back here in America.
But tons of fruit. Oh man, the fruit was so good. I've never had better bananas in my life. I must have been eating like 4 bananas a day.
Then just seeing the nature, it's so beautiful there. Oh my gosh, it was warm and it was definitely great.
We went to South Africa as part of Terrascope.
Terrascope is a program at MIT where freshmen embark on a project largely on their own. Independence is encouraged rather than having us follow a strict syllabus. Our year, we studied global water security problems.
Sometimes when you study a country or like try to come up with a solution, you can't just like read something on the paper and get it. Like you have to go there and see it and experience it yourself and talk to the people who actually live there.
So we actually went to a place where this problem is reality.
We went to South Africa for the Terrascope trip this year.
We came there, we learned about the natural ecosystems in the area. We learned how water was connected to everything there.
We collaborated with students from Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University.
Something that was really important in Africa was the idea of speaking to people and getting the people involved in solving a problem.
I gained a perspective that I wouldn't have gotten any other way.
Just kind of walked into like a concept of water and just walked out with so, so much more.
We traveled to South Africa expecting to see the water issues we had studied for the past semester. We ended up seeing a lot more than just water. In addition to water security, were problems of poverty, education, sanitation, and politics.
During our trip, we were taken to a school where all of these issues seemed to intersect.
Our group of about 50 people from MIT, along with 20 from the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, visited the Charles Duma School where the principal, Ma'am Sume, spoke to us. Before arriving, we were only told that this was a school without water. It didn't take long to see that there was far more behind the story of the school than just the water problems it faced.
Now you can say we are trying to give quality education to the poorest of the poor. It's not the middle class, it's not kids that are coming from these houses, it's from the squatter camps. And obviously, it is those kids especially that need to be educated. Because there is no other way they are going to make it in life without education. Because you want to say to them, forget about where you're coming from. You are the crafter of your own future. And whatever you are going to do in life, it depends on you. You don't say not having resources is going to limit us. Nothing has to limit you in life just because you don't have anything.
It's hard being a student at this school while growing up in a poor informal settlement.
These settlements are often called townships, a term left over from the apartheid regime. At that time, Black South Africans were forced to move into segregated townships where they faced severe inequality in education and employment.
Before visiting the school, we had explored the Mission Vale townships, where many students lived. One of our guides of the area, who was a former resident of the neighborhood, described the conditions there.
This area, it's called Fair Plus, so it's one of the underdeveloped areas. A lot of people are unemployed, and there are few who got permanent or professional jobs, you know. Yeah, a lot of social ills around.
It was easy to be discouraged by the state of the townships. We saw scattered shacks and piles of accumulating trash. Several goats and packs of malnourished dogs roamed about freely.
Our guide told us about government projects in the township.
One of the most visible projects was building houses for those living in shacks. However, some people we talked to felt that there was a lack of communication between the people's needs and the execution of the government housing project.
This led to problems in Fairplas.
Someone will be located a house somewhere there, nice built house. Then he will say, or she will say, no, I cannot stay there because I don't know the place. And that place is far from the community, from anything that he used to. So some of them who are here are like that. They were given some houses, but they don't want to go.
Despite these conditions, the people were incredibly friendly and brave. One of the townships we went to was nicknamed Soviet because it was a center for the resistance against apartheid. Many of the adults in the community spent years fighting in the struggle.
Unfortunately, according to one of our guides, many people who fought in the struggle didn't go to school. He explained one of the reasons why.
The reality of those that were in the struggle that have not had any improvements in their own personal lives is mostly because comrades did not have time to go to school. They sacrificed their life. Most of them spent time in prison, spent time in exile, spent time running away from the police, couldn't sit in the classroom and study. Very few have been able to do that. And those are the ones that are benefiting now.
We also talked to a man named Gosinati, who was an activist during the struggle.
Let me sing you the song that we used to sing for Mandela when he was in prison. Holy Sasa, Holy Sasa Mandela. I was very enthusiastic about activism in my early days. Spent about a whole week not attending classes, going from meeting to meeting. Because now I'm an activist now. You know, a person who mentored me in contributed in my political upbringing, and he used to be my teacher, always wanted to emphasize to me that you'll be a better activist if you get education. I would disagree with him, you know, on that and many other things. Remember, in South Africa as well, there was this thing of liberation now, education later, which was not a correct strategy, you know.
Show us the way to freedom in our land of Africa, in our land of Africa. Mandela, 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 Mandela shall fight for. Mandela says freedom now. Mandela says freedom. Show us the way to freedom. Show us the...
In addition to education issues, water access has proved itself to be a problem in many South African communities.
One of the graduate students who was traveling with us, Thomas Mundy, told us about changes in water access in his hometown in northern South Africa.
I grew up in Limpopo. To fetch water, we had to travel a long distance. Now, you need to have a wheelbarrow to get water. So if you don't have a well that you drill, and then you have to have a wheelbarrow to go and fetch water. I think now we are a little bit better in Limpopo because there have been a lot of dams that they've been built in the past 2 years. So I think everyone will be able to access water from now onwards, but I'm not sure. But a lot of people now, they are drilling these wells, and then they are building tanks for themselves so that, you know, they don't have problems with water.
Despite the positive changes in infrastructure, much work remains.
But if you're from the rural area, Not a lot of things have changed, because still a lot of people, they have to queue for water. There are a lot of taps on the roads, on the roadside, and then they have to queue, a very long queue. And then there's a limit. Maybe you have to get 3 or 4 barrels of water, and then you don't have more than that. So because other people, they have to get water as well. Because water comes in a certain time. Like they'll say maybe from 12 to 2 o'clock, and then water, you know, there's no water anymore.
One of the bus drivers on our trip, Ryan Bowers, told us about the poor quality of water in his suburb. We talked to him one evening while most of our group was relaxing and chatting.
If you don't have a fault in your home, you're drinking poison, sorry. Now you can actually see when you pour the water out of the tap, it's like all green. Water's green, so you can't drink that. And it's amazing what it does to your skin. I know my hair has gone all dry, and you actually have like white marks on your body, like a algae or something, like pool water. That's what it looks like after you shower. So definitely there's something wrong with the water there.
We also encountered problems with water and sanitation in the Missionvale townships.
Some of these neighborhoods had only one tap per block.
But amidst this struggle, there are people doing good things. Our guide was optimistic.
Like some people are doing things for themselves. For example, I started an organization in Nambuyetu, and I also work for another organization, Environmental Network. So we deal with the issues of environment and all those things. And I'm also a community researcher for ENMU. So I interact with a lot of stakeholders, the NGOs and the community members. So yeah, there are people who are doing good things in the community, but just that maybe those stories are not reflected or are not reported in the mainstream media.
Ma'am Sume, the principal of the Charles Duma School, is one of the people doing good things for her community.
The failures of the school's water infrastructure forced the school to cancel frequently, making the students fall behind. Ma'am Sume knew that she had to find a way to keep her school going all day.
As we stood in a big crowd in the open schoolyard, she told us about her incredible journey.
When I came in here in 1998, the pressure system was very low. So if you flush a toilet, it would take about more than 30 minutes for the system to fill in. And also, if you opened a tap, it was only a drop of water that was coming. So it would take a long time for even a bucket to fill up.
Sometimes the water would fail completely. Once, the pipes collapsed and they had no running water for months.
Each and every time we were battling with water, and each and every time we were having challenges with our toilets, we had to release the kids early. And I know some people will say, why didn't you close the school? But you close the school and the kids are going to be out there. Are they all going to come back?
She gathered volunteers from the community of parents to help her get the school running.
So I talked to the parents and I had 80 volunteers in January. But by June, you know, it was 27. But out of the 27, it was only females. You know, men never want to volunteer. So it was females, and we had to connect a hose pipe through the community hall so that we manually put the water in 20-liter buckets, and the parents had to manually flush the toilets every day. And then we had a normal school day.
After speaking at the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University about her work, she was approached by someone from Coca-Cola who was impressed by her accomplishments.
And after my speech, she said, you know, we have a program of rainwater for schools as Coca-Cola. But unfortunately, your department didn't give us your school because we've got the 100 schools already. But she said, okay, I will see what I can do and I will make you school number 101. And she contacted Coca-Cola Atlanta and they came on board. And obviously the money was not enough. So the school had to pitch in employing labor. But at least now you can open any tap. On the 15th of July last year, we opened our taps for the first time and we had water.
Ma'am Sume successfully managed to turn her struggling school into a source of hope and change in the township.
Stories like this make us believe that there can be a better future for those living in the townships and show us how to make that happen.
These kids are not waiting. They are continuing and they are passing. And you want to make sure that by the time they leave here, at least it's quality education that has been offered to them. So that is my biggest vision.
Another thing on the trip that really struck us was the warm and welcoming culture of South Africa.
We witnessed the strength of communities through our visits to many community gardens. In these gardens,
people from the local neighborhoods spent much of their time growing fruits and vegetables. Any extra food was given out to the neighbors. Selling crops for money was virtually unheard of. On our trip, we heard many stories about South Africa's cultural diversity. South Africa hosts a large variety of languages and culture, with 11 official languages and hundreds of unofficial ones. We talked about this diversity with one of our Mission Vale guides, Zim.
You see, this is it's really a rainbow. It's a rainbow nation, this one. We live with Nigerians, people from Somalia, people from Congo, Kalas, Xhosa, Zulu, Sotho, different kinds of nation are living all in the one place.
The people we met were also very enthusiastic to teach us about their culture. On the last day of the trip, Tetende Mapeto, a friend we made in South Africa, taught us a song in Shona, the main language of her home country, Zimbabwe. It means, children of the world, unite. Come together to protect the earth.
Yes, we can do this because
unity is power.
That's what it means.
Despite many of the problems we saw in South Africa, the township conditions, poverty, unemployment, illiteracy, we saw a lot of hope. We met many incredible people working hard to give themselves and their children the best possible futures. In the midst of the harsh conditions, there were many good stories to tell.
This piece was created by Terrascope Radio, a class in the Terrascope Learning Community at MIT. The class was developed in collaboration with the MIT Program in Comparative Media Studies. Terrascope is part of MIT's Office of Experiential Learning. We would like to thank Professor Sam Bowring, Director of Terrascope, and Deborah Axel, without whom the Terrascope program would not be possible. We would also like to thank the students and staff of the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, especially Professor Martin DeWitt, who organized our trip to South Africa. Of course, we cannot forget to say thank you to the wonderful people we interviewed, even those that did not make it into our story. Finally, we would like to thank Dirk Stalker, our undergraduate teaching fellow, Sabina Medila for helping us at the 10th hour, and Ari Epstein, our radio instructor, for guiding us throughout the whole process. I'm Anthony Ochantali.
I'm Haley Sipnewski.
I'm Shingini Shaha.
I'm Emma Chant.
Thanks for listening. Sous-titrage Société Radio-Canada